Good afternoon. It's 5 o'clock in London, England, on Tuesday, May the 10th, and it is 11 a.m. in Georgetown, Cayman Islands, my home when I'm not in London, where today my guest I'm pleased to see is Michael Joseph, head of the team at Property Cayman. And much more than that, I've known Mike and his family for a very, very long time. I'm sure we'll find lots to talk about on What Comes Next Live. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you very much for having me, Tom. Privileged, honoured, grateful.
Well, the feeling is mutual, and now we've done that bit. What's happening for you? I mean, first of all, how are things in Cayman? I mean, I've not been over since September, last time I would have seen you.
Right.
And so, you know, what's gone on? And, you know, just a little, and then a little bit about that, and then perhaps just tell us about who you are and what's on your mind and maybe your business, things about Cayman, whatever you like. The floor is yours.
Okay, well, I suppose put a bit of context for your listenership. I am my 20th year in real estate. I'm from Cayman, educated in the UK, France, Spain, the US, and Cayman. I realized I was missing one, and Cayman. And I've been in real estate for 20 years now. My dad's an architect. My brother's the immigration guru of Cayman. It's a very small place. It's a wonderful place. It's almost a utopia. It's the most wonderful place in the world when the rest of the world's on fire, unfortunately, in various ways and various means. We just sort of seem to be in this sort of lovely protected zone. And the reason I say that is because, to answer your earlier question, what's going on in Cayman? So we're under heavy demand. People recognize that it's, you know, the police don't carry guns. We've got racial and social harmony. We've got political stability. We've got law and order. The streets are clean. The education system's great. The hospital and medical services are phenomenal. First world. We're a first world country that happens to be in a third world region. And we're almost the best kept secret. But listen, I've been in real estate for a chunk of time now. I was with Remax for 16 years, and I started getting a little bit bored. Became a little bit mundane. It's sort of repeat, same old conveyor belt. And I really started digging deeper and trying to work out what was going on and why I was feeling that way. And I was thinking, you know what? I need to work out an exit strategy. I want out. I didn't know what I was going to do, and I just didn't know how I was going to do it. But I did recognize that if I just suddenly left and did something else, then I would have lost the 16 years of momentum that I had built. Long story short, I basically decided to team up with a younger version of me, a guy called Stefan Pryor, and he's 10, 12 years younger than me. And instead of getting him to buy into the business, I gifted him 50% of the business. Mm-hmm. Right off the bat. And everyone told me that I was absolutely crazy. But my mindset then was, you know what, I'd much rather have 50% of a watermelon mm-hmm. or something that could grow into a watermelon than 95% of a grape, because I was tired, I was pretty worn out, and I liked the idea of having kind of like a puppy to an old dog, right? They rejuvenate you. And sure enough, the dynamic between us is phenomenal, and we've helped grow this from what was just me and Carol Ann, my assistant of now 10 years, but she was a former Miss Cayman. I should always say that because I'm very proud of that. And she was also a former babysitter for me as well. She used to babysit me. And the ongoing joke is that she's still babysitting me. There's no doubt about it. There is an element of mothering there still. But we've gone from us to 16. There's 16 of us now. Left Remax some 3 years ago. In our first company as a standalone company, in our first year rather as a standalone company, we became the number two ranked company in Cayman. Number one was my former company, Remax. They had 16 or 17 agents at the time. And the number three company was William Squared, and they had 15 agents at the time. And we did it with only 4 agents. Hmm. And I think that plays a big role into what we our approach and why we left Remax. I recognized that the old traditional dinosaur approach to real estate just wasn't gelling well with me. It was very conveyor belt. It was very quantity. It was next. It was numbers. And we thought, you know what, let's do this differently. Not for the sake of doing it differently. Let's make a good thing phenomenal. Let's flip the script. Let's change the tone of voice. Let's reverse that negative reputation that realtors have, because nobody likes realtors. We don't do any work and we make far too much money, right? That's, I should say, estate agents for your UK listenership, but we call them realtors over here. And let's just make a good thing great. Let's just improve on the approach, the style, the way we go about things, and humanize it. And we basically dug deep and realized that we're actually in the relationship business. We're not in the real estate business. We're in the relationship business, which means nurturing our clients and customers. And I think Richard Branson said it best, right? Screw the client, train your team so they could really compete against you very successfully, but treat them so they would never dream of leaving. Mm-hmm. So all of these sorts of things we've kind of incorporated and have inspired us to do things differently. And as the leader of this team, I'm immensely proud. We just had our morning sales team meeting and gave unexpected awards to three unsuspecting team members for either anniversaries or gross commissions or big shout outs for phenomenal sales, and just really constantly peppering them with recognition. And it's those sort of things that we've been doing is really trying to make it as bespoke as possible. We've turned it into quality, not quantity. We've capped the number of listings that we can take on so that we're going deeper, not wider, so that we're providing a phenomenal service to our clients and customers, and not trying to dilute ourselves across hundreds of clients and customers, so that ultimately our reputation is going to be, we're going to nail the basics, and we're going to make sure that our existing clientele are overwhelmed with unexpected service. And that means that the word of mouth and the repeat business will flow from there.
So, very cool. I'm really interested in the internal dynamics. You talked about something, you kind of paraphrased Branson and saying, you know, treat people so well they'd never dream of leaving. Right. As you may recall, about 20 odd years ago, I took over from our foreign joint venture partners a resort on the far end of Cayman called The Reef. And then Expedia came into the online market. And in the second year of operations, we were the top resort in the Caribbean on TripAdvisor and top performer in terms of revenue performance.
Right.
And 3 years after that, next to the Ritz-Carlton Grand Cayman, we did more destination weddings than anybody else. That was the result of, to some extent, it sounded like I'm taking the credit, it was the team. But it was really about having an epiphany to flip the script on something else, which was the language of the customer is always right. Mm-hmm. I studied Southwest Airlines, and they do not follow that script at all, because there's a load of people will come to the gate and say, I was on time, you can't deny me boarding, and people will say anything to get what they want on a flight, right? And Southwest Airlines basically puts their staff first so they can put the customer first. So what we did is we said, look, you know, the 8-odd hours that our staff, often many of whom are low-waged in the tourism industry, mm-hmm. those hours they put in are an incredibly important part of their life. They need to be happy coming to work, because you can't fake it for very long if you're unhappy in your job. So we just said, how do we actually look after our people? And so we did all of that. Now, so I'm interested in, you know, the classic motivator is money. Now, without money to a certain level, people will leave. And yes, for the non-North American-oriented audience, commissions paid for real estate for less expensive houses are about 7%. Right? So that's a lot of money. But the flip compared to the UK is the realtors, the estate agents, do everything for you. Right? You don't show the property yourself. You don't do any of that. It's all done for you. But it's still, there is a lot of money in a rising market. But at the same time, money only goes so far in terms of loyalty. So you said something at the beginning, which is really remarkable, about abundance versus control, which is you gave half of your business, but you also then immediately mentioned some of the reasons why. You were a bit burnt out, a bit tired, you strongly felt you needed a change, and you built from there. and you may have only left Remax formally 3 years ago under that umbrella, but you started the branding of, if I remember right, about 7 years ago. Probably.
Yeah, yeah.
And so started building from that intention way back then.
Yeah.
Now it's 16 people. So to pull that, this my thoughts together from listening to you, is what's your role now with 16 people there, and keeping everybody happy internally, and treating them well? I mean, for example, do you still get involved with listings yourself? You know, have you let go of all of that and given it to your agents? And what's your role now, Michael?
So I love being prepared, and I don't make any moves quickly, and any decisions I make are well considered and painfully considered over a long period of time, so that when I do make the move, it's a smooth transition. I still sleep well at night. There's no shock to the system. And, you know, leaving Remax took 2 years of planning before we left Remax, mm-hmm. right? Before I even gave my day's notice. So that it was a smooth transition. Mm-hmm. And that is in part why we were so successful in our first year as a standalone company. But what's next for me is a great question. This is a three-year transition process where I'm transitioning from being really a full-time player in the game, doing 50, 60 transactions a year. And we, in fact, just to highlight the tone of voice, we, and I can't believe I even used the word transaction, but we actually flipped it and turned it into family served. Hmm. So instead of doing 50 or 60 family served a year, I now only want to do 5. And my goal is to do 1 a year. And that happens in 2 ways. That is just increasing the threshold or the value of the properties that I'm dealing with. So I will just do super prime, like $10 million and over. And the current market is keeping me very busy in that sector, thankfully, which is great. But the rest of my time is actually coaching. I am transitioning from being a player, a full-time player, to being more of a coach of the game than a player in it. Mm-hmm. So by doing that, and I'm actually getting a lot more fulfillment, mm-hmm. I'm really enjoying imparting my experience and my knowledge and stuff that I didn't realize was actual experience or knowledge. I just thought that's just that's how you do stuff, right? But with new agents, we specifically grew our team with people that had a couple of years' experience, but not too much. Because we want to be able to, I'll use the word recondition their train of thought, mold them into a certain approach to the market so yeah. that we're not having to change their old habits and ways because they're stuck in the old school way of real estate sales. And I have to say I'm really enjoying it. I'm doing, at the moment, it's monthly health checks, so digging deeper with each individual sales agent, and then there's weekly accountability sessions. So we have our goals, we have our weekly behaviors and activities, getting them to populate their calendars, so that they know what they've got to do on what day or what time on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And from there, they're going to start to see the results. If you do the same thing on a repeated basis, on a consistent basis over a long period of time, before you know it, you know, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Mm-hmm. You can't suddenly eat an elephant. You've got to have a bite every hour, I don't know, for a lot of hours, but you'll get there in the end. And it's to try and avoid getting sucked into the whirlwind of life by just distractions. You'll end up at the end of the year not even remotely closer to your end goal or goals, because you've been constantly distracted and you've just been spinning wheels. But you can gain momentum and traction by just sticking to those behaviors and activities that complement your goals. Hmm. And if you respect them, like a doctor's appointment, sorry, honey, I can't come for a coffee. I have got something in my calendar that I've got to do. And that may be sitting down and doing social media posts for half an hour.
Yeah.
Right? Whatever it may be, it's as long as you stick firm to your goals.
I'll come back to the change in role and the patience you're developing with that, and the coaching and mentoring and training of the team, all of which sounds great. Tiny little tidbit from me around how I teach this to people is most people use what they call KPIs, key performance indicators.
Right.
And in most sales teams in any industry, one of the KPIs they use is sales. gross commission closed in real estate terms, right? And I would point, and I might turn around to the leader of business and say, what are the top KPIs you look at? And in real estate, they might say GCC, right? And I would go, that's not a KPI. A KPI is an indicator of future results. Looking at your sales as a KPI is like driving a car looking in the rearview mirror. You're looking in the wrong direction.
Exactly.
What you're talking about is what I call source activity that will create the outcomes down the line. So focusing on relationships in an environment that, like Cayman, and like you and I both know so well, is you are only as good as your reputation and relationships in Cayman. Doesn't matter how technically proficient you are, your word is everything and your behavior is everything.
Absolutely.
And so a team focused on relationships and always treating people well, that's a source activity that's tough to measure. But putting a calendar aside that says, are you spending half an hour, two or three times a week on your social media presence? Who are you phoning? How are you categorizing the people you contact? How often are you calling them? What conversations are you having? And these source activities can take time to build results. But without them, all you do is measure the end result. You're never going to get anywhere. So I just call it source outcome. And it is a party trick to go to CEOs and say, what are your top KPIs? And they're almost always rearview mirror measures.
Thank you very much. We refer to them as lead measures. I just pulled down source activities because it sounds better. It's a little bit more. We don't have a problem with lead generation.
Yeah.
We're trying to hone in and fine-tune our lead conversion. And that sounds very clinical, a little bit commercial. So we actually term it in more of a, the whole family served concept. And what are we doing? How are we communicating? How often are we communicating? And our KPIs are things like, how many copies have you had this week?
Exactly. And there are different levels of that. Without taking away from the cultural focus that you have and the behavioral focus you have, it is a science, right? I mean, you in order to serve those families, you have to treat it scientifically. Going back to what you were talking about changing your role, that's a radical shift to move from 50 families served a year, because for those not knowing your business, you largely deal with residential homes, right? So therefore families served. There are different areas of real estate, but that's your focus. But to move that right down, that's interesting, right? Because it's really easy, particularly in a small island where everybody's 1 degree of separation away. It's not 6 degrees. People would probably not have to make more than one phone call to be introduced to you if they don't already think they know you or think they know you.
Right.
So it's like, oh, Mike, but could you just do this $500,000 home for me? I've known you since high school or whatever. It's sometimes quite tough to say no. But the toughest, in my own experience, I've radically changed the work I do in the last number of years. And I say no to the work I used to do 5 to 10 years ago. But I found that quite difficult. So sometimes it's quite difficult. I'm just like, I have found that business owners often find it quite challenging to shift their role. Absolutely. How are you finding that? What's been your experience of that? Because there could be lessons in there for other business owners and leaders listening.
It's very difficult. You don't necessarily want your clients or customers to feel like they're being pawned off to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all in the language, and it's all in the patience of that. I mean, I'm speaking frankly and transparently with clients. I say, listen, I'm more and more of a coach of the game. I'm probably not the right agent. However, I can bring in a specialist in either that price point or that location or that type of property that is far better suited to representing you. And the good news is that I debrief with each individual agent on a weekly basis.
Right.
And we deep into your personal home. So now you've got somebody that's got the experience. You've got the Mike Joseph that you've called and asked for. Mm-hmm. But now you've got somebody that's got faster legs. You need a winger to run down that wing. I've got to make you back, man. You know what? I can't run down the ring. The people run faster than me.
I like the analogy.
Bringing in a specialist, and we are a true team, and I'm copied in on all of the emails and stuff. But the reality is that my team member is doing the lion's share of the work, and I'm just sort of guiding the ship every now and then. But I'm not.
I love it.
I don't have time or capacity to do that.
So you are putting a. If you've got, so how many people would you say you're coaching in your internally in your business right now?
10 other agents.
So, if we think that through in terms of your own capacity, that's 10 full meetings of an hour, hour and a half a month with each of those. Call that 20 hours a month.
And then 5 hours a week.
Right. So already you're looking at least 30 to 40 hours a month going into coaching. Now, in a business of 16 people, I'd say that is vanishingly rare amount of time to do that. But what it allowed you to do when you gave that download as to how you would address that question carefully and delicately and respectfully to people wanting you is that effectively the message I would receive, and I have been a client of Property Cayman, you have sold a family home for me, is that I do get Mike. Right? Because you are putting that time into always checking in weekly and ensuring things are going the Property Cayman way. The other piece of language is at no point, and I'm very careful at listening to language, at no point other than certain relevantly specific points, you use we all the time. And
absolutely.
You know, it's not a new thing. You've used we, right, ever since you brought Stefan in. Right.
Yeah, this isn't Michael Joseph Realty Limited.
Which, for those who don't know, it was before you did this. Right?
Yeah.
That was the way it worked at Remax.
I changed it probably 5 years before, it, like you said, right? This was a slow transition. I was kind of gearing up and positioning to doing this, even though I never realized what I was doing. I did know that I knew that if I wanted to retire one day, I need my revenue stream to continue.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed to be a Property Cayman product, not a Mike Joseph product.
Yeah.
Otherwise, how am I going to sell a share in a business that's not named after them? It's just named after me. So that's always been part of the process is absolutely transition. And do you know what you asked earlier? How are you doing it? Is it a challenge? Absolute challenge. It's very difficult to, having done the same thing over and over and over for 19, 20 years, how are you handling it? And there's elements of stress. You know, I'm like, certain clients are very, Mike, listen, I really like Stefan or Jude or Jen or Joel or Seb or Mara, all of them. But I really want you to be the lead. And I understand. And I am involved. And I chime in. And I write emails. Sometimes the agent will write the email on my behalf, send it to me. I will tweak it. And then I will send it copying them in. And I will say things like, Jude and I have been discussing this at length, and Jude came up with a great idea. And that is a perfect segue into what I think is important in this whole process. In order for this to be a profitable company, I need to ensure that my team members are successful.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't I create a platform from which they can reach new levels of potential they never realized they had in them, right? Because by default, we're all kind of lazy. We'll only really do our token 10% of potential. But if I create an environment, a platform, an admin support team that helps them realize whole new levels of success, then it means that the company isn't relying on my productivity and my performance to be successful and profitable. It is just by natural default, the individual members of the team are creating its success and profitability.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. And something interesting in what you've built, I mean, there's a lot of cool things in here. I think some of the things you're if people have never heard you talk about business before, you know, anybody who's heard you talk about real estate, whether it's their own individual home, whether it's anything else, you come across as highly knowledgeable and instinctive and fast to respond because you've been doing this most of your adult life. Right?
Done a thousand times, right? And you've done the same thing over and over.
Intuition is a combination of instinct and experience, and they all kind of blend together. But it's really interesting to hear how considered you are with this. So actually, for your business, it's the duck analogy. You will swim furiously underneath. You'll build the foundation, I'm mixing my metaphors, so that it all looks smooth on the surface. One of the interesting bits is, as you will know, but I was very involved in real estate and development in Cayman for decades. And it is an industry that historically is dog-eat-dog, and it's how much commission can I make? And then when it's a rising tide that floats all boats, one of the issues used to come across is that certain people have an internal ceiling as to how much money they need to earn. and then they go on cruise control for the rest of the year.
Oh.
But for the business, that's very tough. But it's interesting if you look at addressing that, and it can be done through, I'm sure you've looked at this, things like company-wide bonuses and whole shareholdings and stuff like this. But what's interesting to me is the Warren Buffett quote. It's only when the tide goes out do you find out who's swimming naked. So in 2004, we were at a point where the economy, as it has been for most of your and my adult life, the economy came out and was booming more than the rest of the world. And then we had the hurricane. And it was fascinating to see how businesses responded, reacted, how they did. And it was really interesting. The tide went out overnight. And some thrived and some struggled. And the people who thrived then got the phone calls for the next number of years in every sector. Caymans, to my view, and I have not been on the island much the last couple of years with COVID, but even though I moved 5 years ago, I was on the island 7 or 8 times a year talking to people all the time. So a finger on the pulse to some extent, but with an external view. But it certainly looks to me that the real estate environment in Cayman is booming like it literally never has since perhaps the late 80s. And it's been generally strong, but it has. I've been around long enough, it goes in cycles.
Yep.
One of the interesting things is going to be, and it's tough to, if you've got some agents who've been there at least 3 or 4 years, which you do have a few, share those stories and go, it's not always going to be like this. So, you know, how, you know, what does it look like? And all that comes part of the coaching and mentoring. And it's like, to go tangential, my scheduled blog post tomorrow, it's really about talking to people under the age of 45 about what it looks like to live in a high interest, high inflation environment, because it's very, very different. And in the UK, most university students have student loans. And because they're linked to the rate of inflation, which currently has spiked to 6 or 7% in the UK, they'll be paying 12% interest on their student loans. They have no financial literacy or understanding of the way the market has been, and history does repeat. And you know, the piece I put in there was my very first mortgage was in 1988, back when 22-year-olds could afford a home in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Impossible now. Possible in Cayman now with the pricing.
Yeah.
But the interest rate for a 3-month period spiked to 14%. And my first mortgage in Cayman was in 1992 at a place called Palm Springs, which was a new build pre-construction. A condo for $125,000, which, top of my head, $4,400 now. Right. So my first mortgage was at 12% interest.
Wow.
So what was my number one investment in savings if I had a spare couple hundred dollars a month as a young professional? Pay down the mortgage. Now, when interest rates have been 4%, people don't do that. So it's just, I'm veering off for a minute. But basically...
No, I love it, because
part of the role of a leader is to look a few years ahead, but also use their experience and go...
Exactly.
What are we building the business towards? You know it for yourself and other stakeholders within the business, but also to have the, you know, you're a Caymanian, which it makes a big difference because you've lived lived and worked your whole life post-education in Cayman. So you have a different perspective on reputation and relationships, et cetera, than people who've come in newer. But also you've seen it, right? So, you know, you can...
In the cycles. So my slogan for many, many years was secure tomorrow today. I love the concept of looking back at my younger self and thanking my younger self for making really good foresight, good long-term, long mindset decisions and here I am today going, wow, this has happened because I did that. And that goes also back to the repeated weekly behaviors and activities so that I can arrive at a destination with momentum and direction instead of sort of scatterbraining and whirlwinding and sort of spinning the wheels through life. But... What's I suppose the point I'm trying to make is that for about 5 years, I maintained 12 months of operating expenses on cash in my business account, just in case. Everyone thought I was crazy.
Hmm.
And guess what happened? Okay, so I like to call it I'm in a constant state of preparation. A lot of my team members call it a constant state of panic. But either way you look at it, I sleep well at night, because when COVID hit, when the Great Recession hit us, and there was a jolt to the market, whether it's buyers stopping or sellers coming or stopping or what have you, I still slept well at night. I didn't have to change anything. I wasn't naked when the tide went out. Actually, at the beginning of COVID, on week one of lockdown, we hired one person. On week three of lockdown, we hired a second person. Mm-hmm. We were doubling down. Mm-hmm. We carried on, if not increased our marketing, when all of our competitors were naked and they cut back. We were also innovatively and technologically advanced compared to a lot of our competitors because we had already pushed the envelope on what, how can we make this more efficient, which meant we were doing transactions, electronic financial transactions and money transfers, transactions electronically and doing family served and sales with people, sight unseen, from lockdown. Mm. Whereas a lot of our competitors, they said, no, I'll give you the check when we're out of lockdown.
First world standards, they were still in the third world. But it goes back to another Buffett quote, which is, be fearful when others are greedy, and greedy when others are fearful. And it's not about greed or fear, but it's really, that's fascinating to know that one of the pieces of advice I gave to people who were in full-time secure employment when the pandemic hit was get friendly with entrepreneurs. Because being an entrepreneur is not a matter of bungee jumping off a cliff all the time. It's not a matter of mortgaging the house on credit cards or doing anything super risky. It's a spectrum. So knowing that you're somebody who needs a certain degree of financial cushion so you can sleep at night, that foundation you put in place meant you were in a position to take advantage of opportunities when others were running too close to the bone. So these are important lessons for leaders to know their own approach towards risk, to build their business around how it works for them so they feel comfortable. Then entrepreneurs are about, if you kind of quasi-translate the French, it means people who take openings. Right? Yeah. So when you see a gap, you're going to take it. And that's cool.
But it's about positioning yourself so it's just a natural segue and you're not running or you're not out of breath and you've got the war chest that you've already been building up. And I share that risk-averse approach with my team members, and I have shared it. Like, guys, save. And that's even the advice for, we've set up Property Cayman Cares, which is designed to support young Caymanians getting on the property ladder. There's a lot of talk about affordable housing issues around the world, the developed world at least, and particularly in Cayman. So it's that concept of saving. Don't go out and buy that $11 latte every morning when you probably shouldn't be drinking coffee at all. If you drink coffee, then make a coffee at home and take it to go. Save your money so that one day when you wake up, you can join the property game or invest in something. Don't use your pension money that the government allows you to take out on a spoiler for your car or a new jet ski or a fancy bicycle or a new clothes or a new watch or nice shades. Be sensible.
I can't skip over that because the comment about don't go buy coffees. I mean, I get the thing, do not ever use your pension money for something short term. That's not what it's for. It's to protect you from yourself.
Right.
But there are two elements, and Cayman is very similar to London in terms of price, house pricing, in terms of relative to what people earn. There are two elements. One is the deposit, right? And that takes years to save sometimes. But the other is the income multiple, right? You know, my two oldest sons, one's a manager at a big four firm several years in, the other is a qualified accountant. These are well-paid young professionals. And yet they had to buy a place together because there was no way in heck that they could manage the mortgage affordability multiple. So Cayman has massive housing affordability issues, and it's a social cohesion issue. So the social cohesion is stretched by that a little bit, but that's a totally different conversation, but I had to get it in because I feel passionately. What I will say to close off my thoughts and then to hand the floor over to you to close with any thoughts for the audience is one of your agents, who I'll name check, Jude Holland, is very much about relationships. And when I was selling my property, you and Jude came. You introed it, but again, you modeled handing it off. And Jude handled it. I always knew you were involved in need be, but actually after a while, she's got the younger legs and she ran her socks off. She also sold that house after a number of challenges, not of her making. When Cayman was actually in 24/7 curfew, and I've written her a testimonial about all of that. But that's not what I wanted to mention in my closing thought, was that a couple of years later, now the rising tide means that some people are buying properties, simple property transactions without using a realtor. right, and selling their properties without using a realtor. That's a temporary blip because there are risks and stuff to that.
Yeah, that's fine. We understand.
And what's interesting is that my sons, my adult sons, when they were buying a place, actually I asked Jude if she would talk to them and give them a bit of advice. And at that point, they weren't sure what they did. And they did actually end up buying, you know, outside the realtor's market because that's where the property was listed. But relationship-wise, who are they going to call in 5 years' time when one of them might say get married and want a bigger family home and they're earning more money? You know, and so it's playing some, you know, yet another wealth management aphorism is the easiest way to make money is to think longer term than the next person. And relationships are about that. And, you know, I've got a call with somebody from Cayman next week who I last worked with 10 years ago. And they literally emailed me out of the blue and says, the work you did with me 10 years ago, I want to work with you again.
Tom, I worked with you and your team about 10 years ago with Sam. Right?
Absolutely. Sam
Nair,
wonderful.
Yeah. Listen, I love the long-term mindset. Warren Buffett said, you know, why doesn't everybody, somebody said to him, why doesn't everybody do what you're doing if it's so easy? He's like, well, nobody likes to get rich slowly, right? You have to start with some money, there's no doubt about it, but it's all relative. Just be patient and do it over a long period of time, and then one day you'll wake up, right? Now, the guy has been extremely successful. He's also 1,000 years old, so he's been doing it for a tremendously long period of time. But the sooner you can start thinking long-term mindset, the better off you'll be. And to become an agent at Property Cayman, first of all, you've got to go through a gauntlet, all right? This is quality, not quantity. And one of the comments that I share with the individuals is, what happens if you come here and you don't make a sale in 12 months? Can you afford to live?
Yeah.
And that's a major thing. If they say, oh, no, I need to make a sale, I'm like, well, I'm sorry, we're not the agency for you. We want people that are doing this for the relationship and long-term benefits for them, the community, and for the company with which they work. If they need to make a sale, like I did when I was a young realtor, I would say and do things just to make that sale happen. I got to make a sale this week. I got a mortgage to pay. But if you can go into it with a lot more relaxed and patient, and you're putting clients above commission, and it's about what's best for them, which includes advising them not to sell or not to buy now, you're establishing a relationship that is borderline unbreakable. But you've also got to nurture and maintain that relationship for the long term. You can't just sort of say that and then get upset when you find out they bought through another agent 3 or 6 years later. We have homeversaries. So any of our purchasers that purchase a home, any of these families served, we congratulate them. Hey, guys, it's just congratulations on your homeversary. Just keeping front of mind, right? So that when they do, when the kids come home from college and they want to, who are they going to call first? We are in the relationship business. And if we can nurture and maintain the relations, then it's the gift that keeps giving. And it's super easy.
To summarize, basically what I've heard from you today is that you're deeply thinking, always preparing, and what people see on the surface is the result of a lot of work that goes in underneath. I can't help but my last thought around Mr. Buffett, who of course I've been studying for 30 plus years.
Right.
He's in his 90s. And people, for up until relatively recently, last few years, people went, what will happen when he leaves? And then when he dies, and the penny finally drops, he still has less than 25 people in his headquarters, and he's one of the biggest companies in the world.
Incredible.
He buys people. He buys people, and the secret to that business is the culture, and it's no longer about him. So it won't miss a beat when he goes. So I look forward to the day when you're 95 doing 5 rather than 50, and I will have a coffee with you at Bluestone when next time I'm over and ask you where you are. Thank you so much for being a guest, Mike. I know we ran a bit over time. It would be a lot of nuggets in there for business owners and leaders that listen to the podcast. Thank you so much.
I love reading your blogs every day, and thank you for inspiring and keeping us all on the edge of our seats and helping me, you know, aspire to new levels as well. So it's integral. It takes a village, right?
Oh, okay. Thanks, Mike. Okay, absolute pleasure. Talk again soon.
Okay, bye-bye.